Here we are, Amy, with our final guest of the year on EAA Radio. Can you believe
how do we get to final guest of the year?
It happens every year. Ugh. You blink and there it goes.
It's not possible. Not possible.
Yet here
it is. Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, yeah. I mean, here everything flies.
All right, Mel, let's start John and tell the people who he is.
We've got Michael Maya Charles, who is an author, and he's with Artful Flying. Welcome to the studio.
Thank you, guys. Nice of you to have me in. And just being the last, there's something very poignant about that. Now,
you are our cleanup guy.
Oh.
That's what we call you in the back room. We call him the cleanup guy.
We didn't have the squealing pigs yet, I guess.
No squealing pigs on this show.
No,
that's some other... Yeah, that's the guys in the morning.
Oh, that would be kind of hard to hear in the morning, wouldn't it?
So, Michael.
Yes, ma'am.
You have been here at the show pretty much all week. And you have a certain perspective on flying in general. I know Michael had a career flying big, heavy aircraft, and he moved on from there philosophically at night. By the way, he was one of the night flyers in our world. And then he decided that flying around in a Cub was just not heavy enough, I think. And he got into heavy lift helicopters. Now, I don't really understand it, but I know he's very happy with it's an Ericsson Skycrane?
It's an Ericsson Skycrane S-64.
Yeah, you don't get any heavier, I don't think.
Well, actually, the Russians make some things that are heavier, but
yeah,
that's the heaviest one here.
That's all right.
Yeah.
What drew you to it, and why do you love it? Because I know you love it.
Yeah, I do. When I was a kid, actually, I started flying helicopters. When I was an entrepreneurial kid, and I used to mow lawns. And one of our neighbors, who lived several miles away, had a Brantley B-2B, and he would come over to the farm where I lived, and he'd pick me up and take me to his yard, and I'd mow his grass, and he'd take me back in his helicopter. And those little seeds, when they're planted, they are hard to get rid of sometimes as you grow up. But I went through, there was no place to fly helicopters where I grew up, so I kind of had to live with that for a while. He actually came by one day in this thing that sounded like a spaceship, and he landed in the yard and picked me up, and it turned out to be one of the early Jet Rangers. Bell Jet Rangers.
Wow.
So I was pretty enamored by this thing that lifts off in the yard and goes flying and comes back. And I really couldn't address it because, again, there was no place to really scratch that itch, if you will, until I was much later in life. And I was asked, this was after all my fixed wing flying, I was asked maybe 15 years ago to write a story about being an old dog learning new tricks. And so they took an airline pilot and made him a helicopter pilot, which was quite an interesting experience in itself. And once they got the skull opened up and pulled the brains out, it actually worked pretty well. It was actually pretty easy. But the helicopter is a very different kind of flying. And the Skycrane actually came about, again, in response to another article that I wrote. I have been teaching helicopter since about the 2001 time frame. But I actually pitched Ericsson to go fly their Skycrane. Everybody knows, or a lot of people know what the thing is, but no one has talked about it from a flying standpoint. And they were really kind of cool to the idea at first, but they eventually said, you know, maybe that's not a bad idea. Then they got a new owner. The new owner said, call that guy, and let's see if we can do a piece. So I flew the piece with the chief pilot, and he offered me a job. And I was not interested in the job because I was an airline pilot at the time, and I was already on the road about half the month. And to think spending the other half the month on the road again with another type of aircraft, no matter what it was not very appealing. So once I retired, they offered the job again. And I went out and flew the Skycrane for a summer. I'm not in it right now. I'm what they call seasonal pilot. They call me when it's necessary. And so far this year, they haven't called. But that may change in the fall when things go overseas, because they fly all over the world with these things.
They do some very unique things. I've seen the sky cranes in footage from forest fires. I've seen the sky cranes in footage from high-rise buildings.
Yes.
What was your most favorite mission?
Well, actually, I did one thing for the summer. I flew fire, and I worked for the U.S. Forest Service on a contract, and they basically put us on the road with a... Looks like a big horse trailer. It's a trailer that carries all the tools, all the oils, all the rags, all the cleanup stuff, all the parts that we can put in the thing, and that's dragged around by a 3/4-ton pickup truck. And then they have an 18-wheeler that goes with this well full of kerosene, full of jet fuel. And it's kind of like a flying circus. And we'll sit someplace for a while, for maybe a week or maybe a couple of days. And when something flares up, literally, we go put it out if we can. And it's an amazing way to make a living as a pilot, because you're kind of a gypsy in effect. You're on for, depending on the company, somewhere between 1 and 2 weeks. Then you're off for a bit, and you come back and fly more.
Now, it's a pretty heavy duty firefighter. That it holds a big tank, and from what I understand, you can refill that pretty quickly.
You can. It's a 2,650 gallon tank, and it's bolted to the center frame of the helicopter. There really is no inside on a sky crane. It's all, except for the cockpit, of course. It's all just kind of a bolt on thing. So 2,650 gallons, and it fills it in 45 seconds. It's filled with a hydraulic pump. And you can also do the same thing with retardant, although the retardant is not quite as quick to go into the tank. And then we go out and we can disperse it at different rates. And the rates are dialed in the cockpit. We can tell it to dump it all at once, or a very long swath, or a gentle rain, however we want. And usually the guys on the ground, the Forest Service people, which are those are the hard workers of the bunch. We just sit up there in our little cool flight suits and helmets and wave, and they're telling us where to go, and they're down in the hot and heat and the smoke. So it's pretty tough work for them. Girls and boys, by the way. We got male and female firefighters these days, and I'm watching them walk up some of these mountains. I'm going, woo, those are some serious hardworking folks.
Yeah, so it's a good thing that you haven't been called to then this year for those kind of operations.
It is. It's always good news, bad news for a company like that.
Right.
It's nice to have the money and the contract when the things are good. It's bad for people that have houses out there in the backcountry, so forth.
Now, this machine is really good at one thing, which is lifting very heavy water, fire retardant pieces of machinery, whatever you need.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the most efficient thing in the world, is it?
Mm-hmm. It's not efficient at all. It actually burns 500 gallons per hour, which is absolutely blinding. It carries about 1,300 pounds or 1,300 gallons of fuel. So you got about 2 hours until you need to find some place to land. And when you're going cross-country, the cross-country planning becomes quite critical. Because you have to make sure, A, that you're not having to deviate around a large thunderstorm area, for example, which would burn up a lot of gas. You wouldn't want to just land it anywhere, because it's a big, heavy helicopter, and it just won't land anywhere, or everywhere, I should say.
It's not going to fit on the helipad of someone's...
It won't go into a helipad in a lot of places, and that's too heavy. It's really made in two models. It's either an F model or an E model, and it's either a 40 or a 45,000-pound gross weight machine, which is a big, heavy helicopter. So you have to be very careful. It also will not ground taxi on its wheels up close to a fuel pump in most little airports, because you would knock down the whatever's close, or you'd blow down anything that's anywhere near the helicopter. So it's very difficult. You have to be very careful about it and use your head going in and out of these places.
It's kind of weird, because it's moving along only a little quicker than your J3 Cub.
That's true.
But you've got all of these other complications going into it. I have to think that from a safety standpoint, and this is where it's really cool, because Michael's got a book called Artful Flying, which I don't think it has a math equation in the whole book.
Thank
but
God.
It is, no, it's more of like a zen of flying, and it's one of my favorite books to recommend to students, because it talks about safety in a way that's so organic and so common sense and down to earth. And I can see that a guy who has to figure out what to do with a machine that burns 500 gallons an hour and can only land at airports where the runway is stressed for it and the fuel can come to it, I can see where it comes from now.
Well, you know, Amy, it really doesn't matter what the venue is, whether it's a helicopter, a balloon, a glider, a warbird, a J3 Cub even. It's really about the thought process. It's really about how we approach things and how we think about things. You think your way in and out of the air. You don't fly your way in and out of the air. And I think that's a big key point. So you take a lot of those same ideas to the cockpit of a sky crane that you would in a J3 Cub. It's just a little different set of problems that you have to work. You know, in a fire situation with a sky crane, you're often out there with a lot of other people. There are what they call SEATs, single engine air tankers. You'll have big bombers that are trying to stay out of your way. And we're doing the same thing, trying to stay out of their way, of course. But the whole idea of keeping all these balls in the air, if you will, and all these things to challenge you is a lot of fun, but it's also very demanding. You're in smoke oftentimes, which reduces the visibility. It's kind of an inadvertent IMC in places. We have to be very careful that we're, of course, operating as low as we are, that we don't hit what we call dry snags, which are the hardest to see, or a ridgetop, or an antenna that they put on top of that ridgetop. So it's very pay attention kind of flying. And there's two pilots in that aircraft, and they are both outside almost all the time just because of that. So it's a real challenge. But again, if you're in a Cub and you're in another situation where you're flying in a crosswind, going into a gusty little crosswind someplace, whole new set of problems. But it's all about the thought process, how we approach it.
Now, do you get back into the fixed wings at all these days? And if you do, has this changed the way you approach flying a fixed wing?
You know, I've never left fixed wing. Even when I was with the airline, I flew a J3 Cub, which I own, and a 185 Skywagon. And I've had both airplanes for almost 20 years. I live on an airpark. We fly regularly. I just think, you know, rotorcraft are just another venue, and they're just they have a whole new way of demanding things of us, and that's the fun of them. I think we enjoy flying airplanes that demand something from us. We like to have those challenges and like to be able to meet them and to polish and become good at that. And I'm not that polished in the aircraft yet, but I'll tell you, in another 30 or 40 years, maybe I will be pretty good at it.
Well, and it seems to have some pretty unique and rewarding applications. I was reading on the website that that it was involved in rescuing and relocating an endangered Sumatran rhino in the rainforests of Borneo.
Yeah, it's really an amazing aircraft.
I don't think there's anything else that can do that.
Exactly, because it can pick up 20,000 or 25,000 pound on the hook. In other words, something you can pick it up. You know, we did a thing a couple of years ago with the Dream Chaser, the Sierra Nevada Corporation's little replacement for the shuttle. And I was involved in the buildup to that flight. And what we did, basically, is we picked that little guy up for the very first time and flew it around on the end of a hook, if you will, on the end of a line in the Colorado area where I live, in order to see how it would fly through the air. They had no idea yet.
And how did it perform?
It performed pretty well. It had a little bit of yaw instability, and that was partly due to the drogue chute that they had on it to make it streamlined, if you will. Of course, it's never going to fly that slow, hopefully, in real life. But now it's been dropped by the Sky Crane on a couple of occasions, and pretty soon they're going to go into orbit with it. I mean, it's
dropped in a good way. We want to.
Yeah, yeah. Gliding with grace, I think, right. Is Steve Lindsay.
From altitude.
Yeah, Steve Lindsay's is a former shuttle astronaut that's in charge of that whole thing. He's the flight ops guy, and that's what he calls the shuttle. The shuttle doesn't really fly; it drops with grace.
Michael, if people want to find out more about artful flying and the things that you're doing, where would they go online or to find you?
Well, artfulpublishing.com, A-R-T-F-U-L. A lot of people try to put two L's in there, but it doesn't have two L's. Artfulpublishing.com is a good place to start.
Oh, fantastic. And your book's still in print.
Absolutely.
They can get it, right?
It's actually in its second printing, which is neat for a small title like that to be able to go through the process of selling out and having to redo it again.
So. I think it's just because I keep telling people they have to go buy it.
That's probably what it is. It's between you and Rich Stoll, I tell you. Yeah. Both of you guys. And Doug Stewart, I think, from Safe.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're all the important people in aviation training, and they know quality when they say
it. Oh, how nice of you to say that. Thank you.
Michael, thank you so much for being with us, our Charlie.
Careful.
our capstone.
Capstone, that's
capstone.
Exactly right.
Oh, I'll feel great all day for that one. He's a capstone.
This is Amy Labota and Magneto Mel. We are signing off for this year at AirVenture 2014.